The Oracle Network.
Riddle Me That is a true crime podcast that deals with adult themes. Some episodes explore disturbing topics such as murder, abuse, sexual violence, drug abuse, suicide, and self-harm. Please listen at your own risk. Theories discussed in episodes may not be the opinion of the host.
Welcome back to the final chapter of Conversations with the Captain. So this is part four. We're going to talk about movies. We're going to talk about one of the captain's favorites, The Notebook. We're going to talk about the captain's short-lived bass player podcast. We're going to talk about consent with regards to explicit images being sent and received. And we're also going to talk about things that podcasters can do to help monetize and grow their audience, as well as how to deal with really harsh reviews as a podcaster. I hope you enjoy this episode. We're going to jump right in and talk about consent with regards to explicit images.
What I also realized about crime or the world is I figure guys on a creepy level, 90% of guys can be creepy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 100% could be creepy, but I'm just saying a lot of guys are creepy. I know I've sent a couple of emails or direct message to somebody and they never replied. And then I sent another one. It's I shouldn't send the first one. And I definitely shouldn't send the second one. Leave this poor girl alone. But the amount of creepy direct messages that I get, I wish I could just write a book about it. They're so bad, you know? Or the worst is when they push you to follow me. And you finally go fine. I think it's really weird that you want me to follow you, but I don't want to follow you, but you're forcing me to follow you. So what is this proving? And then you follow the person and then the person says something like, oh my God, I can't believe you're following me now. And then they send you a picture of them topless or something. And you're like, this is escalating very fast. I read it. And I think in my mind, well, by the sixth line, that would be by the sixth line of messaging somebody that I whipped out my penis and took a picture and sent it to them. It's the same thing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's unsolicited and it's awkward, uncomfortable, and weird. Even though you're a man receiving those images, I can see why it would hit you the wrong way.
Yeah. And look, when I first heard about women getting unsolicited dick pics, I'm like, what? That is fucked up, right? Never thought I would be getting the reverse.
I think people are too quick to kind of dismiss stuff like that. Oh, he's a man. He's lucky to be receiving that. But at the end of the day, it's the same thing as for a woman receiving unsolicited dick pics. You didn't ask for it. This exchange between the two of you wouldn't lead you to believe that you're going to receive those images. So there just isn't any level of consent there. And that can feel really intrusive, I would think.
It just comes and you go, what? It's totally different if you ask for it. But I'm saying this is hey, I love your show. Oh, awesome. Stay cool. Talk to you soon. Boobs. What? What? How did we get to there? We shouldn't have got to there. Or one time it was the most unflattering picture of down there. I keep telling people, at first I thought it was the predator fighting with the aliens. I didn't really know what it was at first. And then I went, oh my God. Then I realized what it was. And I was like, how did we get to that? How did those first two, somebody must have never said hi to this person ever.
I just don't understand the objective of somebody doing that. What do you think is going to result from this? B, do you think we're going to engage in some sort of relationship? And C, if those things do happen, I just don't get it. I don't understand what the point is. You'd hope that somebody would read the room or at least ask you if this is something that you would want. But receiving an unsolicited labia pic or vagina pic is not something that I think you would want. Someone should definitely check and see that they have your consent before sending an image like that.
And we don't talk about a lot of private stuff on the show because we want to keep it about true crime. My favorite murder, I love them. I think Karen's one of the funniest people in the world, period. not funniest female, like seriously one of the famous people in the world. She's just awesome. I love them both. I'm just saying that I definitely love Karen and I love her tweets. Anyways, hashtag Karen for life. But they like, they'll talk more about themselves and what's going on in their lives, you know, and that's what works for their show or what they want to do. That's how they create their show. We don't want to talk about that stuff. We think it has no relevance. It doesn't, whatever me and Nick's relationship, whether we're friends or we're related or whatever it is, it does not change the dynamic of what he thinks of the case or what I think of the case. It just doesn't change it. You know, whether he's married or not married or whether he has 10 siblings or one sibling, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and so like, we try to just like keep that to ourselves. And so, yes, I have mentioned that I was married. Nobody has asked me if I got married again, you know, or like, or if I'm even straight. You know, they're just assuming that I like women. I'm like, how dare you?
You know, how like, dare you make that assumption?
How dare you make that assumption? No, and they'll also like, you know, this, have you heard the term like taking my shot?
Shooting my shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, shooting yeah, my
yeah.
shot.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
yeah.
what it's not taking my, that's how old I am. So shooting my shot. I've seen that like 10 times. Let's say I've seen it 10 times, 9 out of 10 of those girls, like when I went to their profile, they're married. It's like, what fucking shot are you taking? You know what I mean?
What is the objective?
Yeah. It's just fair. And I'm not saying that the other one wasn't married. I'm just saying like, when somebody's like, hey, this is just me shooting my shot. And you go on their Instagram and it says like, proud mother of three, you know, army wife or something, you know? And you're just like, what? Which like, hey, good for you if you're taking your shot and you're single, you know, fine. You have the right to do that. You heard this guy's, but maybe start off with like, hey, are you in a relationship? You know? Do you like women? You know, like start off with something other than here's a paragraph of this is me shooting my shot. And also, like we were talking about before, like with Nick, and people go, oh, I'd love to talk crime with him. Yeah, but once he gets too drunk, he's not going to want to talk to you about crime. He doesn't care. At that point, he'll be like, hey, you seem like a nice person, but like, I don't want to talk about this. You know, like this is what I do every day for a living, you know. And he wouldn't be rude or wrong for saying that, you know, but people start assuming that they know so much about you. And so it's like, to me, I'm like, yes, we are best friends, but you also only know a very small percentage. You know, like if you had to have people guess who has more education, they'd guess wrong probably 90% of the time, you know. And then like, if you had to like have people guess like which jobs we do and which, you know, most people are like, when I tell them, I pick most of the cases. They're like, really? I mean, yeah, it's not that Nick's lazy. I just send him like 6 or so cases and then he has to look them up too and see if he likes them. But like, essentially I'm the one like, you know, and every now and then he'll be like, hey, there's this other case I need to put on there. I'll be like, okay, cool. But most people just want to assume that stuff, you know, or like you said, oh, you like the Gilmore Girls or like 10 Things I Hate About You. You know, it's like, you would never know that because it's like, we don't talk about that stuff. You know, we try to talk about, this is why I should never be on a podcast. They talk for like 4 hours and then I'm like, have fun editing that out, you know?
No, seriously, it's been so great. I've enjoyed all 4 hours and I'm sure all of my listeners are really going to enjoy it as well because, you know, I've been listening to your show for so many years now. One of the first true crime podcasts I ever listened to. So, of course, I feel like I know you and Nick on a level. And this has been really great. You've been so vulnerable. And I feel like I've got to peel back some of the layers and get to know you a lot better. And I think a lot of people listening will be really grateful that you were so vulnerable. You're just so much more of a complete person now, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, all of a sudden, like the picture starts becoming a lot more clear. And I got to hang out with Josh from True Crime Bullshit. And Josh was saying like, they like knew of me and listened to shows some and but he had a perception of me in his head. And then like we hung out and like he just kept learning this like almost every couple of hours. He was just like, he's like looking at me like, can't believe you like, you know, Dawson's Creek. I can't believe you like Gilmore Girls. And then we go like into depth with it. And he'd be like, oh, you really like them. I'm like, yeah, like it's bad. You know, and we were talking about like one of my favorite shows, and I recommend it to people all the time that are trying to get themselves together, or if they're dealing with like depression or anything, is like Queer Eye. I think it's one of the best shows ever invented, because they're trying to take people and just make their lives better. And it's really about like taking personal responsibility for yourself, but allowing yourself time to give a shit about yourself. And I just love that show. And me and Josh were just talking about that show. And he said something to me. I was like, it was one of the nicest and maybe the most honest things I've heard from somebody. He basically said, like, and I'm preferencing this, you know, it was basically like, I kind of like had a thought about you, and I was a little worried about meeting you. And now that I met you, I'm not only like, was he like, I'm surprised, I'm pleasantly surprised, but like, it was almost like he was apologizing for having a stereotype in his head. I mean, if that makes any sense.
No, it totally so, makes sense. Right. Cause you don't share those things.
But yeah, I know. But it was such a great compliment. Like, it made me feel so good. Like, yeah, because like, if I heard the show, I'd be like, this guy sounds like a beer guzzling college, you know, frat boy douchebag, you know, sometimes. And it's like, that's not me at all. You know, sometimes look, a lot of these jokes, they just happen to be penis jokes because that's what, you know, that's what came up at the time. But
it's also a character, right? Like you guys have this dynamic and this character that you play, and you play off of it a certain way. Is that right?
Yeah. It's like you start falling into a role. And I'm sure you noticed that with like your other show, like the three people talk, and now you start realizing when you can jump in, when you shouldn't. I mean, there's some episodes that we're like 10 minutes into the show and I haven't even made a sound yet. And I'm just like sitting there going like, how long can I wait to not say anything? Because everything he's saying is interesting. So I don't want to disrupt, you know, because some people will be like, you just disrupt too much. I'm like, I don't want to disrupt. But I also don't want a show where it's just like Captain Vanilla is sitting there reading, you know, the dictionary, you know, welcome to True Crime Garage. You know, this is the Crispy Kernel. I love when I call him the goat. He hates it.
So yeah. Funny.
He's like, I don't really care for that one.
I like that one.
The other day I was going, bah, bah. And that's the other thing too, is like, okay, you've had friends like that you've done stuff with. It's really hard to admit when that your friend is better. Like, I know he's better at the show than me. I mean, he's not funnier than me. He's not more creative than me, but he's better at the show than me. You know, that's just a fact.
You know, but you've got totally different roles, though. I think saying someone's better or worse, it's like you've put him into the research role and he does that role and you do this other role. So I think you guys are both equally good, but it's just doing different parts of the show.
Yeah, but I'd argue that if we had to switch roles, he could do my role. I don't know if I could do his role. But I'm just saying I'm saying that's like a compliment to him. Like, I think I have not listened to or talked with anybody. Like, probably the closest is like Brett from Prosecutor Podcast that knows as much as like Nick knows about just random cases, where you can just be like, yeah, there was this case in 1982. It happened in Oklahoma. And Nick's like, yeah, the prosecutor was Pat Danielson. And he wrote a book later. And that was called To Catch a Killer in Green Underpants. You know, it's like,
I like that title.
He would like know all this information. You know, he's like, yeah, it was a snorkeling accident that went bad. There were also a fire involved. You know, it was a late Pinto, a 76 Pinto orange. It's called an Orange Burst Pinto, 1976. And he would like know all this information. And you're like, how did you know this? And he's like, I read a book about it in sixth grade.
To be able to have all of that information on hand and just be able to like recall it at will is bananas.
Well, Nick hates it when somebody says, hey, come on my podcast, and they don't tell him what they want to talk about. Because like he doesn't mind going back to his notes and just reading over it. So he has some knowledge. And just like when you were talking about the Noah case, I totally forgot about the nationalists and the loyalists. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a thing. Like, that's totally could be a thing, you know. But also, like, Nick's, you know, what I'm saying, my point is that, like, it's, I think it's okay to say somebody's better, you know, he's better at that part than me, you know. Every now and then when we get in disagreements, he'll be like, you think you're so funny. I'm funnier than you. It's like this big thing. He's like brought it up like 10 times. I mean, no, you're not. You're not funnier than me. Not saying that he's not funny, but he also hates live events though too. So I always tell him, like, and that's, see, what people don't understand is when we first started, I was doing research, he was doing research, and then was just like talk. And then we're like, that doesn't flow well. Like, we're jumbling up the story. And then Nick was awful at it. So it was like a lot of uhs and pauses. And then Nick's like, look, if I write down my thoughts, I can read them and do it better. I'm like, okay, well, then do that. Well, the first time he did it, like, you sit there and you're like, when am I supposed to talk? You know what I mean?
Oh, you don't have any scripted breaks in there.
Yeah, he would never like stop. So he'd just keep going. One time I let him talk for like 20 minutes. Like, I'm 20 minutes into the show and I go, well, that's interesting. It's like 20 minutes of me not talking. And the first thing I say is like, well, that was interesting. But I waited 20 minutes just to see if he'd say anything, you know? Like, I'm just going to sit here and just not say a word and see what happens. And he was probably reading like, why isn't he jumping in? You know,
I was like, wondering how you guys scripted that. Cause like when we do The Path Went Chilly, I'll take Robin's old scripts, retool them, and then leave blank spaces for Ashley to react. And then we all discuss. And so like a really short script ends up being so, so long, but we script in pauses. Otherwise, we're not going to know when to jump in. So I always wondered if you guys like scripted in where you're supposed to react.
Sometimes he'll just stop because he gets to a point where it's like he's going to take a drink of water or whatever. And then if we're coming back in, so like, you know, we're stopped in the recording and then I'll come back in and that I'll lead us in with something, you know. Because sometimes I know the story, but I'm like, well, where are you going with this? You know, because like I don't want to say something, you know,
get ahead of yourself.
Yeah. And sometimes Nick will be like, oh yeah, 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 we'll talk about that later. And sometimes you can hear me getting mad in the episode, like, because I'm like, I don't know, you know, I just brought that up, let's not wait till later, let's talk about it now, you know. But I think if it was like too scripted that people would, yeah. And like maybe like 3 or 4 times I've put a joke in after the fact, you know, where it's like he's talking and I'm like, oh, that was a good joke. And one time I put a joke in and he told me like, cut that out. So we went back. And then like when I was editing, I put it back in. And then, but only like 3 times, but people accuse me of all the time of like, oh, you must just put your jokes in afterwards. I'm like, no, like that'd be weird.
I mean, even if you did, who cares? If this show comes together and it flows, which it always does, I don't have a problem with somebody inserting, you know, saying something differently after the fact in post or adding in a joke. I don't care. It doesn't ruin my listening experience.
Well, there is sometimes where I make a joke, but he's cutting me off where I will, because we're not in the same room with each other, I can move his back so you can hear me and then hear him. And that happens quite a bit. And I think one of the things that does make our show like actually sound listenable is there's a lot of times like if I interject, but he keeps going, that I can cut out my interjection. So there's probably actually like 50, 60 times of me interjecting that you never hear, of me going, yeah, but, and then he keeps talking. And I'm like, but yeah, but yesterday. You want it to make it look more presentable. I'm like, no, I don't. Because I want people to know, like, yeah, our show is big and all, but it's still the two of us. We don't have a manager. We don't have a team of people. I do have a guy that helps me, like, fold the shirts. You'd think Nick would help me, but no, he doesn't have time. He has to watch football. But my buddy helps me every week, and we fold the shirts, and we put them in the packages, and we drive them to the post office and drop them off because we use stamps.com, so we don't have to wait in line. And then we go out to lunch every Friday. So that's why it says ships every Friday, because it's just me shipping the shirt. But like I talk to other podcasters that are like, oh, we sell like 2 or 3 shirts a month. I'm like, yeah, but they're only, they would sell more, but people know that it's just a drop ship. They order, this company prints it and they ship it. You know what I mean?
It's less personal. Yeah.
I just think it's cooler. Like most of the time it comes in a captain bag. And the only reason why is because we went to order bags and the options were like black, blue, or blue with anchors on them.
Oh, perfect. Like, yeah.
I was like, what? And they were cheaper. I was like, let's get those. They come in little captain bags.
Well, yeah, that was a no-brainer, obviously.
Yeah, but it's just like when you see that, you know, or it's like, you know, or sometimes like I put like extra shit in there, like, you know, like the, you know, these little wrist bracelets or something, you know, or like a bottle cap opener or whatever, you know, like I just got a bunch of lighters because I just like to make shit with our name on them. But like, you know, you just throw in a couple extra things and like it makes it so much more personable, you know. So yeah, but good luck to you and let me know and I'll come on and I always like missing person cases, so
I'll keep that in mind. I like missing person cases too. I only ever do unsolved, so we'll have lots to talk about. I'll pick a good one.
Yes, awesome.
All right, thank you so much for chatting with me and like giving up so much of your Friday evening.
Yeah, I want to apologize for talking so much and have fun trying to edit that down.
It'll be good. It'll be multiple episodes. I think I'll probably like chunk it into three or something like that.
Yeah. There might be good enough stuff there somewhere.
There's some good stuff in there. I'm pretty sure of it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye. And now we're going to transition to something totally different, and we're going to talk about The Notebook.
And also Notebook. Oh, come on. Every time The Notebook comes on, you know, when she's like, why didn't you write to me? He's like, I did write to you. She's like, because it wasn't over. And he's like, yeah, it's not over. It's still not over.
Okay, so I've always been a huge Ryan Gosling fan. I'm Canadian, and so Breaker High was like a staple when I was growing up. And I remember right after The Notebook, Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams were dating and I saw them in Vancouver and I was so excited. I really wanted to go up to them and talk to them, but I didn't because I like to be cool and not weird people out, but I really, really wanted to.
Well, I always wondered if psychologically her dating him after that movie messed her up because like it's a big movie for her. It's a big break. He's really good looking. Like, she probably fell more in love with Noah than she did Ryan Gosling. You know what I mean? Because they're playing those roles. And to fall in love with that character and then have your career take off and money coming in, you know what I mean? Like, that it would be devastating because then what's your next relationship? Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, even though you're acting through a scene, the guy's still jumping up on the Ferris wheel and holding on and saying, I'm going to let go unless you agree to go on a date with me. You know what I mean? Like, you're falling in love with that character. Just like in 10 Things I Hate About You, if she would have fallen in love with, Heath Ledger, it's like, how could you blame him? You can't blame him. And just like when they sit there and watch the traffic lights change and then they dance in the street. Yeah. Notebook's a hard one. It's not just let go once you flip on, oh, I'll just watch this for a second just to see where they're at. And you're like, oh no. And then like the best part is when like he just makes believe that she chose the other guy over Noah. And that's when she comes to and she's like, oh, no, I remember. And then she remembers the ending. And then also, like, that's a good one, too. Like, it makes you learn about love and life. Like, that, as much as it's, like, maybe a bullshit story, I love when he's like, well, that's what we do. We fight. And then we make up. And then 5 minutes later, you go back to being a pain in the ass. But it seems so much more real than so all those, That'd be tough if like if those five movies like all came on.
What would you pick?
I think it probably would be the one that I haven't seen in a while. Like I haven't seen Silence of the Lambs in a long time. Well, it's also like there's a thing too about that one where you remember when you're a kid, do you drink coffee?
Oh, yes.
So like when you're a kid and you start drinking coffee, it's you think it's an intellectual thing.
Go to a coffee house. It's very cerebral. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like there's a coffee. I hope this makes sense. There's a coffee and an intellectual vibe about Silence of the Lambs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. And I think I still think there's like an intellectual vibe to Shawshank because it's about thinking about more than where you're confined to and letting your brain control your life and not your surroundings. And I think there's an intellectual thing about Good Will Hunting. I don't know if the other two have an intellectual thing. I think those are just feels. And Forrest Gump is not an intellectual thing. I think it's just a feels movie. But all the other ones will like make you question life, but they also shape your philosophies. You know, like I love when Robin Williams tells him about how he missed the home run because he had to go see about a girl. You know, he's like, I just slid my tickets across the room and said, I got to go see about a girl. And he's like, you got to go see about a girl. And your friends let you do that shit. He's like, they knew it, you know? And it's like, but that's like, it's a good philosophy for life though, too. It's like, if you want to do a podcast or you want to do a YouTube channel, start now. It might not work out. I actually had an idea for a podcast. I know Nick had one before we started True Crime Garage, but I had one because I wanted to just talk about being a bass player. And like, you know, because I always heard like, you know, podcasts could be popular if you're in a niche. And I was like, you know, the bass player world is pretty small, but there was really no podcast at the time. So we started the podcast. I think we're probably like within 10 episodes of like releasing them to the public. I released a bass player podcast. And I thought about doing that podcast for like 5 years, like way before, like, I mean, probably 4 years before Serial was a thing. I mean, that's how early I was listening to podcasts. When I started listening to podcasts, you actually used to have to download them and put them on a iPod. Do you remember that?
No, I definitely don't remember that. I think when I first started listening to podcasts, it's pretty much the same as it is now. You could download it on the app, or you could listen offline, or you could just stream it online, but never like downloading it to your computer.
Yeah, so like eventually, like you just downloaded them on your phone or subscribed on your phone. But back in the day, you'd have to like download them to your computer and then upload them to your iPad or iPod. Yeah. And so like I would have all these gigs on the weekend and I would like spend a few hours like filling up my iPod. So I had enough episodes to get me through the weekend driving back and forth. But I thought, I mean, I would like practice too. Like the show was going to be called The Bass Player Experience. So I was like, this is a captain with the bass player experience, blah, blah, blah. And I talked about it for like, talked about it to people, thought about it in my head for years. I do one episode, put it out. Within a week, almost had 1,000 listens, which is not bad for the first week of a show that nobody's heard of. And I'm like, I didn't have any fun doing it. So I started the second episode and by like, I'm like 20 minutes in. And I had like the rest of it scheduled out. And I'm like, it doesn't sound bad. And it's cool and all, but I'm not having any fun. This feels like more work than the true crime podcast. So I just didn't put it out. But I wish somebody would have told me, you know, it's so much better to try it. You know, like you don't even have to put it out. Like if somebody's like, I want to try a podcast. Me and my buddy, we talk shit all the time. It's hilarious. I'm like, here's what you do. Schedule a time to call each other and talk from 6 to 7. And if it's not that good of a conversation or there's a bunch of whatever, but if it's decent and you guys go, oh, that was pretty good, then record it and then listen back to it and then record another episode and then edit that down. and does it sound better? And then send it to a couple people. What you know what I mean? Like, do the thing. And chances are, after like a couple episodes, if you want to continue, you will. But if not, you're going to go. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's points in your journey that you're like, why am I doing this? You know, or like, I got to keep going or push through this, you know. But you know what I mean? But like, if you would have done your first one and you were like, I hate this, then like, you should just stop, you know, like, who cares? But like, that's the Goodwill Hunting type thing. It's like, once you know what you want to do, just do it. Cause I have friends since we started, they tell me about their podcast ideas. And the one guy I told him, I said, you know, we have like almost 550 episodes plus almost 150 bonus episodes. So we almost have 700 episodes. And you're still telling me about the same damn idea that you told me about when I started my podcast. You know what I mean? Like, life is too short. Try the thing. If it's not fun or you're not good at it, move on, you know? But don't find yourself like dreaming about some, you know, idea that you're never going to pursue. There's so many people like listening right now that it's like, man, I have this great idea for a podcast, but you know, it's like, well, try it. And if you enjoy it, then do it. Get 30, 40 episodes in. If it's not making any money or not getting any traction, then give up if you want. Or reassess. You know, my friend does Crimepedia, and you know, they've been around a year now, and they've same amount of listenership pretty much for the last year. I think it's growing a little bit. But at the end of the day, he's like, look, it's fun. It's like a great hobby. And if one episode's not like a home run, or like maybe it wasn't that great of a research episode, oh well, you know. So now I feel like I owe all your listeners like $50 for listening to all my crap.
It was an absolute pleasure. I'm so fortunate that you came on and chatted to me. And I don't think any of my listeners or anyone who comes across these episodes is going to think that you owe them money for talking about all the stuff you have. You've been incredibly vulnerable, and it's been so amazing to hear.
One of the things I hate about you when she says the problem is I don't hate you at all. Like, that's such a sad scene. But it's also supposed to be like based off of Shakespeare.
Yeah, you're right. It's based on The Taming of the Shrew, which is one of the few Shakespeare plays I don't think that age quite so well. It's pretty misogynistic, but the movie, they flip it around and they make it quite a bit more female friendly, and they're on more of an equal playing field, which is really nice to see. I think even looking back when the movie was made, it still ages pretty well. Like, it definitely holds up, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's basically like we're going to take this concept and, well, and see, when you were tossing out all these, like, you know, like movies that are, I'm sure they're powerful movies, but I'm like, look, nothing's more powerful than watching like Forrest Gump 50 times.
No, I think you're totally right. I think there's two different type of favorites. There's the most like intellectually satisfying or impactful that like really stick with you and you think about them because they're very existential. And then there's the formulaic ones that make you feel good. You know exactly how it's going to feel every single time you watch it. And so you reach for it again and again and again. And it's just like eating, you know, macaroni and cheese when you're a kid and then eating it again when you're an adult. It's like that comfort type of food that makes you feel good. And so you can't say no. Whereas some of the other movies I spoke about, they're the type of movies that you need to be in just the right type of mood to watch.
Yeah, but I also think there's a thing like when we're like, when you're a teenager, and like musicians do this all the time, they're like, who are your influences? And people will be like, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Radiohead, Bjork. Then they'll throw out like a weird one, like Jay-Z. And you're like, and they're like, just like toss out all, you know, a couple jazz artists. And it's like so contrived, you know, because like when you're like in high school and you're in college, like you want to be the cool kid, right? What's your favorite movie? Oh yeah, Silence of the Lambs. You can get by with that one. And then you can get by with like two more like artsy ones. Like, have you ever seen Elephant by Gus Van Sant. It's amazing. It's like, it's one of the most boring movies of all time. It's based on Columbine. It should be fascinating. I think the movie is so slow and boring, but people will put it in their like top three because it's artsy, you know. It's like, I don't know. I'm over that phase of my life. I'm 40 years old. When people are like, what are you influenced by? I love when people go, what did your parents listen to? And they'll be like, my parents listened to jazz and Motown. I'm like, my mom listened to Michael Bolton and Celine Dion and Kenny G. Like, you know, I'm screwed, you know? So I don't know. I think there's like more common threads. Like if we toss out like all like the crap, you know what I mean? It's like at the end of the day, there's a fabric of America and Canada that has a underlying fabric of Rocky, because I was like played a bunch like during the day. Forrest Gump, Shawshank Redemption. There's probably a couple more that were played like all the time, you know. But I think we're like more made up of those things than we even think we are, you know. But try that next time somebody calls you. Just, is she a big fat person?
I'm not really sure I can pull that off, and I don't really know what context I would say that in.
No, whatever they say, that's how you reply. Or like if somebody is like, is the captain there? I go, was she a big fat person? They're like, what?
I'm sure they're like, what is he talking about? Those few who would recognize it would totally get the reference, but I just don't think I could pull it off. I don't think I would ever be quite as good as you are at doing it.
Well, you have to practice. That's the key. Yeah. Do you do a Patreon?
I do. I actually just started Patreon because I wanted to wait until I actually had people who were listening to bother putting out content. So I do one with Dr. Ashley Wellman instead of just doing one for the show. We don't have one for the Pathpoint Chili either. So we have one with just Jules and Ashley.
Yeah, it's tough too, because it's like my buddy, when they first started, they had like some listeners, and I was like, I don't know if that's enough listeners for Patreon. And then he started Patreon, and it's like they can't keep up with Patreon, but they're also not making enough money too. You know what I mean? It's like, well, we got a couple listeners, but that's not enough really to pay for us to do all this extra crap. Like someone's like, he offered them too much crap. Like, you sign up and we'll give you everything, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel that, because that was my instinct at first too. It was like, offer something at every single tier. And it's like, I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah, it's so tough. And like I said, I mean, I've done a couple lectures for colleges on just like the business side. And it helps too, because I know a lot of shows that are smaller than ours. So it's like to see them go, well, you know, we're trying to do this with merchandise and we're trying, you know, and it's like, I mean, what's cool about it is like, I don't know, if you could get up to the point where you're making about six figures, you know, and after taxes, or like after taxes, like, you know, six figures and then take out the taxes. It's a pretty fun gig, you know what I mean? But it's hard to get there. It's like, and I try to tell people, especially like with like Patreons, like every Patreon that you put out, you should also put it out for sale on your website. But it's like, let's say you have 5,000, right? But let's say you have, let's say just for math's sake, you have 100 Patreon users and you put out that episode and then you mention it on that week's show and you have 100 people listening going, eh, that's kind of interesting. But I don't want to sign up for Patreon. You could say, hey, look, you know, sign up for our Patreon is $5 a month or whatever. But this episode is also available in our store. You know what I mean? So if you have 5,000 listeners, I actually got three messages while we're on the phone saying that one of our bonus shows from like 3 years ago, somebody bought it. And so like, I love getting that message. I go, oh, I just made $2, you know? It will like beep again. I'll be like, oh, yeah, I just made another $2, you know? So it's like, so then you're building up your store page as you go. And so then like, think about it this way, let's say you get like some fan like 2 weeks from now and you have all this catalog to listen to. And then they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go to the store page and buy five or six episodes, and you sell them for like $1.99, right? Or whatever you want to sell them for, but $1.99. And then you could even package them, like the first five you can put together or the first 10 you could put together. So somebody's like, I don't know if I want to do Patreon. How about I buy this package of 10 episodes for like $7-$8 or something, because you make the single episodes $1.99, and then you make the packages quite a bit cheaper. Then somebody's like, well, instead of buying one, I'll just buy a package. Because essentially, like, we have this idea of like a, so you need to create about 1,000 true fans. And so what a true fan is somebody that's willing to part with $100 a year. So the trouble is finding enough items to sell them. You know what I mean? Like, you got to come out with a t-shirt, some bonus episodes, right? Like Patreon, if they sign up for Patreon, that's what, $60 a year that they have to pay. So you're $40 away from having a true fan. Well, if you have 1,000 true fans, 1,000 times 100 is $100,000. And, you know, after, you know, you figure out cost and stuff like that, you know, to be living with 60, 70 grand a year in pretty much almost every state in the United States or Canada or wherever, that's not a bad living. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
No, that absolutely makes sense. You're basically diversifying the content that you already have, making it available in a bunch of different ways by packaging it for Patreon and then repackaging it in your store, packaging it with multiples. And then you're looking at creative ways to turn those true 1,000 fans, or all of your fans, I guess, into true fans, where you would classify that as somebody who's willing to part with $100 a year. So if you're a creator on a show, that could mean $100,000. Or if they're buying merch, it's going to mean less than that. But either way, what you're saying is you can make a very comfortable income if that's what your set objective is and you're able to achieve that.
Yeah, because and that's why, you know, I'm hoping with our next contract that I'll be able to control our bonus episodes, because sometimes we do like some really interesting bonus episodes and I tell some people about it and I'm like, you know what? I know I would have sold 10,000 copies of that. At $2 a piece, that's 20 grand. That's a shit ton of money. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of people that don't want to sign up for a monthly, you know, membership cost. You know what I mean? They just don't want to do it, you know? But I mean, like, you're at a good place because, like you said, yeah, the numbers will fluctuate, but that's good. They're fluctuating because the shows I know that are small that aren't fluctuating, I don't know if they have listeners. And what I mean by that is you could have 1,000 people subscribed, and some of them are set to auto download. There should be a fluctuation. But I've seen like some of my friends were like, yeah, dude, we get like 1,200 downloads an episode. And they're like within 10 or 5 every week. And I'm like, are people even listening? Or is it just like auto download? You know what I mean? Like, they might have lost all their listeners and they're still just getting auto downloads. You know what I mean? I don't know. So like, I do think like, and it also shows that you're making contact, because if you do a show in a different area and you get more listeners, it's like, okay, well, that shows you that there's proof that you can grow. You know what I mean? But like some of these other ones that are like, yeah, we covered Casey Anthony. Well, do you get an uptick or anything? No. Yeah. Well, then you're not getting any traction. And I felt bad because, you know, some of the people that like asked me to help them, I like looked at their numbers and looked at what they're doing. I'm like, are you guys selling t-shirts and stuff yet?
Oh, okay. So you mean me personally or us for like the Path Went Chili? No, I haven't done t-shirts for Riddle Me That or for the Path Went Chili. I just don't know if there's enough of a base of listeners who would want to wear our merchandise that it's worth it for me to create it. What's your opinion on that?
Well, here's what you do. Here's a good way to start is don't do direct shipping, like setting up a store somewhere, because people feel that. It's better to even take like a camera phone picture and be like, this is the shirt, or it's you wearing the shirt. But, you know, try to find maybe a local printer and find out how much you charge per shirt. And then what you do is you do a pre-order for 2 weeks. You give people 2 weeks to order the shirt. If you only sell 10, right? That's $250. You order the shirts. The shirts will be about $7-$8 a shirt. And then you'll make about a $15 profit and charge them a couple bucks for shipping, because it'll cost a couple bucks. And if you do that, one, you can buy a couple extra shirts so you can have them to wear. But now you have 10 people wearing your shirt, you know? And you could just do all we did initially was pre-orders. Because I was like, I can't afford to buy the shirts and have them sit on the shelves. So I just do a 2-week pre-order. And people fucking loved it. And but like, I think our first order was like 12 shirts, you know. And I put out 3 different designs. Because I didn't know. I heard this other podcast that I thought was about the size of ours. They were selling like thousands and thousands of shirts per week. So I was like, oh shit, let's put out 3 designs, do a pre-order. And I think we sold like 5 or 6 shirts of each design. And then we printed them and then we shipped them. And it was a learning experience, you know. But it's like, but think about it this way. It's like, you know, everything you do, you have to turn it into some, you know, something. And it's like, let's say you do a pre-order every month, not every month, every other month. So you do it 6 times a year and you end up selling about you make a $500 profit every time. So that's like $3,000, right? So $3,000 extra towards your whole income. And it's like, what you will find is like by putting out those Patreon episodes as bonus episodes to sell, you'll sell more of those because that's what they're there for anyways. But you can even put those out on iTunes and stuff, like sell them on iTunes. So that's something you can look into too, is where it's like, you don't just put it on your website. You put it on the iTunes, because whatever we sell on our website, we sell twice as many through iTunes. Yeah. It's just because it's easier, because all they have to do is go to iTunes, hit download, and it goes right there. With the cool thing about the digital downloads is the way our website works is when you go to buy the digital download, it just sends you, it just says, oh, you just bought this. We just sent you an email with the download. So I don't personally have to do, I'm not personally sending an email. It's like automatically doing it. But you know, but like little things like that. And like, do you ask for tips?
No, we don't do it on either show. I know you guys have your beer fund.
It's like, just come up, just find something, you know, find something that you, because like, you'd be surprised. Like, I don't know. I mean, this year is, last year there was a big dip because of COVID, but this year we're probably over $10,000 in donations. I mean, that's a lot of money. Now we give a lot of that money to like Project Porch Light and like the Charlie Project and other stuff, but because that's what we're like, this is what we're going to do with the beer money, you know? But I mean, some of it we still take, I mean, and that goes to like, you know, we need a new computer and need a new iPad or whatever it would be. But like, especially because like one show of yours is by yourself and one show is like collectively. So like you guys have to really take off for that show to like really make you much money. But all the other stuff on your show, you can do yourself. And so like, let's say you got $3,000 worth of tips in the year. That's a lot of money, you know? So I don't know. And I don't know, what are you doing for a job?
Well, outside of podcasts, I definitely don't have like a traditional job. I'm fortunate enough to be in a financial position with my husband where I don't have to be bringing in an income at this time. So I had the freedom to be able to explore this. And not this past May, but the May prior in 2020, I'd finished my PhD in transpersonal counseling and I really didn't know what I wanted to do with it. So I had the luxury of having the time and the financial resources to explore podcasting and see if this is something that I really wanted to do. And so that's kind of where I'm at now, sort of like, let's try it and see if it sticks.
Well, no. And then, like I said, even just like with my bass player podcast, I literally thought about it every day for like 5 years. And then I did it and like, I didn't like it. And like, it wasn't a failure because I did it. You know what I mean? And like people listen, I just was like, I don't like this. So I'm not going to do this. And lately I've actually been thinking about it again, just because I started listening to there wasn't that many like musicians with podcasts where they're just talking to themselves, like basically, and they do interviews, but half the episodes are just talking to themselves. So now that I've heard it done by other people, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe that's how I do it. But,
like, you're not busy enough with like the 8,000 things you have on the go right now. Let's just add one more podcast to the mix.
Well, no, yeah, that's the thing. But it's like, but at least you can say, like, if in 2 months you quit, or if you quit tomorrow, you'll always be like, I did it. I said I was going to do it. I did it. And then it's like, you get to assess the situation. Like, did I want to continue, or do I not want to continue? It's so much better than like, just, you know, like if you would have went and like got some job somewhere for that first year, all you'd be thinking about while you're listening to other podcasts is like, I could have done this. Why didn't I do this? You know? And like, you didn't hesitate. So you did it. And then if you decide to hang it up and not do it, you're never going to look back. You're going to, like, that next thing you do, you're like going to go forward, you know? And like that, like, really helped me with like True Crime Garage podcast was, once I did the other podcast and I was like, this isn't, I don't like this. I'd rather be on the podcast with Nick. It really changed my views on like, well, who cares if people don't like me? Like, it's my show. So fuck off, you know? Yeah. And, you know, but it just helped, you know? And it also, like I said, I had almost 1,000 people that listen, but I had so many nice comments. Like, this is a great show. I hope it continues. And I remember feeling so sad because I'm reading these nice comments. I'm like, I'm sorry, Steve. It's not going to continue. I didn't enjoy it, you know? I'm sorry. And then one guy, oh, what a great podcast. I really felt like I was just in the room hanging out with you, listening to, you know, bass music, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
And I don't know if you're at all like me, but I can have so many nice reviews, but all I remember are the negative ones. And I think on True Crime Garage, like, Nick is so serious. There's such tense subjects, such depressing, such dark subject matter. So when you say your little comments, it provides a little, I don't know if it's comic relief, but it cuts or eases the tension. And so, I don't know, I personally really like it. And I think the majority of people that listen to the show really like it too.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's so strange too, because it's like, I don't know, I probably listened to like 100 different podcasts, and a lot of them I didn't like. I never took the time to go write a bad review. Like, when you look at True Crime Garage, it should say like 20,000 reviews, 5 stars, right? Because all the people that didn't like it should have been like, I don't have time to go write them a bad review. And then they should also think, why do I want to write them a bad review? It's just my opinion. And somebody else might really like this. And I don't want to write a bad opinion and stop them from liking this. You know what I mean? Like, that's how we should operate as humans. But we're like, oh, I'm a genius when it comes to true crime. I got to write that these guys suck. You know, it's like Tim and Lance. Their show gets horrible reviews. And they're talking about the Mara Murray case. They're like one of the only podcasts that just talks about the Mara Murray case. If you like the Mara Murray case, how could you dislike their show? Because if you do dislike their show, you don't have another show to go to. This is it. This is all you got. You know what I mean? Like, show some appreciation. But no, I think some of it's good. You get a thicker skin, you know?
Yeah, I'm the exact same as you. I just cannot understand what would compel somebody to just write a horrible opinion. And like, okay, I totally get when it's constructive criticism, but so often it's not. It's like nitpicking at things we can't change. Like, I'll get people nitpicking at my voice or the way I say certain words. And what I found really helpful for me personally was I talked to Emily from Morbidology, and she's got a hugely popular podcast. And she just said, don't read the reviews. And for me, it's been the most helpful thing for my mental health, because if I just focus on the overall number, I'm a lot happier, because I'll forget those 10 really great reviews and I'll remember the like one or two crappy ones. You know what I mean? And I always think to myself, like, do you wish that you were putting out your own true crime podcast so you could do everything exactly as you like? And, you know, I wouldn't be there to annoy you, or you wouldn't be there to annoy them. I always wonder that when people leave especially harsh reviews. Do you wish that you were doing this and doing it better? And it almost makes me sad, because obviously if somebody's going to post something really hateful, it's because they're coming from a place of unhappiness.
And the funny thing is, they're not lazy enough to write the review, but they're too lazy to put out the podcast, you know, of their own. Or they might have recorded one and nobody listened to it. Yeah, well, no, I was going to say a bunch of my friends hate Maggie's voice.
Really? I love Maggie's voice.
I think it's great. Like, I think her production's really good. I'm like, hey, have you listened to Murder and Lions? Because I was like, I haven't yet, but I'm going to start it soon. And I thought it'd be cool to have a couple of my friends that were like listening along. And they're like, oh, I hate her voice. And it's all girls.
Yeah, that's super disappointing when it's all women who are complaining about her voice.
They're like jealous. It's so weird. It's like, oh, Maggie. I mean, she's okay and everything, but I just hate her voice.
Just okay? I think most people could agree on the fact that Maggie's more than just okay.
Yeah. Or I love when they say, yeah, she's pretty and all, but I just hate her voice. And you're like, what does that mean?
Well, Maggie's an educated, talented, multifaceted woman. So there's just not really a lot you could insult. So I guess picking apart her voice is like the one thing that could be viewed as subjective, even though I think she's got an amazing voice.
It's like an NPR voice with a twist of sultry. And that's the part that they can't stand. They're like, sometimes it comes off a little more sultry than NPR. I'm like, whatever, you know, it's.
Women get the worst criticism, especially from other women. I think Maggie sounds great.
Well, I think they do too, but it's also like, I think it's funny that like people are like, you know, the white, stereotypical white male is like the privileged male. And it's like, kind of, but that's not the audience of true crime. So we aren't privileged. Like Crime Junkie, they're not as well researched as we are. They have teams of people and they're plagiarizing everything. You know, they have teams of people and still rip off what all these other podcasters are doing. But it's a female fan base, so they support females. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know? So like Crime Junkies, like My Favorite Murder. Like My Favorite Murder, and we started before them. Their first few episodes, as they're blowing up, they're like, hey, we love True Crime Garage. That really helped us out. But it's like girl power, right? So there's a lot of females that listen to true crime. So they're like, let's support our women. And also they're going to have thoughts and perspectives on these crimes that we want as men. So of course, support them. I have no problem with that. And there's also like, if you have a gay host, there's gay hosts that are gay.
True crime obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Patrick, super talented. I love that guy. I also one of the most entertaining hosts to listen to if he's on any interview. Sometimes he's like a wild madman. He's like a cross between like Richard Simmons and Robin Williams, you know, like that crazy energy, you know, and he's awesome. Very supportive by the gay community. That's awesome. You know? So I'm not bitching. I'm just saying that like, you know, I don't feel like we, but you might get it judged harder because your 70, 80% of your listenership is going to be female.
So that wraps up Conversations with the Captain. I hope you all have really enjoyed this series. I know I have. I want to say a big thanks to the Captain for being so honest, so vulnerable, and telling us all a little bit more about who he is as a person. I want to thank you all for listening. I would love to hear from you all if any of you have anything to say about the case, any thoughts. You can reach out to me at riddlemethatpod@gmail.com. Or I'm really, really active on Twitter, so please follow me. I'll follow you back at Podcast Riddle. And I just wanted to let you all know, if you're unaware, I don't have a Riddle Me That Patreon, but I have a Patreon with Dr. Ashley Wellman. So at the $3 level, you get early access, ad-free episodes. At the $5 level, there's a Jules and Ashley, where either Ashley will tell me a story or I'll tell Ashley a story, and it will be conspiracy theories solved, unsolved, kind of a little bit of everything. At the $10 level, there's a Path Went Chilly mini, so we'll have Robin joining us for that. So we're really, really excited. I will link that in the show notes. So until next time, stay safe and remember, accept nothing, question everything. Music by Jobbers.